The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into Let's Edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots to get through today. Later on, we'll be discussing Juventus dropping points, Borussia Dortmund as well. We'll start, though, in the Premier League, where Liverpool could only manage a 1-1 draw against Brighton. Late controversy in this game. Brighton awarded a late penalty, converting it to see Liverpool drop points. Frank LaBeouf and Craig Burley with us. Craig, let's start with that penalty. Was it a pen?
I have to say I think so, purely because he struck him. He clearly kicked the boot. And you know, as people might say, well, it was a bit soft and Welbeck didn't go down for a while. At the end of the day, he fouled him. And when the referee was instructed to go to the monitor, he made his mind up within seconds. And I think it was so clear to him. And it was just a bit of a wild swing from Andy Robertson. And the way the game is refereed these days, then I think the referee had no choice but to give a penalty.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree. On the time of Craig and myself, of course, and especially in England, you wouldn't have seen a penalty, that's for sure. The ref would have said play on. But nowadays, it's completely clear. If you kick the player without touching the ball, it's a pen. And it's what happened to Robertson. He missed the ball, kicked the kicker Welbeck's foot. Welbeck went late on the floor, but still, he missed the ball and he touched Welbeck's foot. So, penalty.
Liverpool, of course, had a couple of goals disallowed in this game. Craig, is what transpired over the match a concern for them going forward with regards to the defence of their title?
No, I mean, obviously, the big story really has not so much been Liverpool dropping points, but once again, Jurgen Klopp's reaction and the unfortunate injuries that he picked up again, and as a consequence of the condensed fixture list and other things that he's not happy about. He made some decisions again that, you know, Sadio Mane would be on the bench. We saw him resting players against Atalanta in midweek. It didn't work. So clearly he's trying to juggle all these different balls at the moment. And it's not easy. But it's not easy for every manager. The bottom line here is Liverpool in fits and starts played okay, but for long periods didn't play well. You know, Brighton had two penalties, one in which they scored, one in which they missed. Connolly, who was excellent in the first half, was running in behind time and time again and missed a one-on-one. So Brighton were a real threat here. And, you know, I think the other thing is with the VAR, IFAB, and I know they were meeting about offside this week through the video conferencing, the Mo Salah goal that was chopped off, I do think we really have to have a look at, this law has to be really defined into gaining an advantage. So we have to figure out, and IFAB have to figure out, how they're going to best come up with a plan that means with the technology that I know is there, is not going to be bringing it down to millimetres. Because that's what the Mo Salah one looked like, millimetres. That's not gaining an advantage. That's just micro-refereeing. And that's where IFAB, that's where the problem is for IFAB, Dan. They're going to have to figure something out. Otherwise, the technology is only going to improve and the decisions are only going to get tighter and tighter.
Let's talk about that post-match interview that Craig brought up, Frank. This was when Jurgen Klopp was asked about James Milner. He congratulated Des Kelly, works for BT Sport, on basically Milner getting injured as a result of the game being early because of the television slot. They had an exchange of views. We've heard Klopp, of course, say quite a few times over the last few weeks that he's unhappy that his team plays on a Wednesday, then the early kickoff on a Saturday. Whose side are you on here?
I want to be on the Jurgen Klopp side because I think I understand that the broadcast, they want games every, 2 hours to make sure that the viewers have many games to watch during the weekend, and that we clearly understand that. And it's only in England that I first played around 12 or 12:30, like it was the case today. And it's a real nightmare for the players. And in this season, especially with the pandemic, you have to make sure that all the players will be you know, assisting in the best way and making sure that they have the time to wake up, to warm up, to get fit and prepared. And it's not the case. And I think Klopp just said that to, he was maybe clumsy talking to Des Kelly and explaining that it was his fault, where clearly, or the broadcast fault, where clearly it's the FA who decides what's going on, the EPL, sorry, who decides what's going on. So it's you have to make sure right now, because we see so many injuries, that we take care of the players. So maybe it means that you have to change something with the broadcast, with the hours you're gonna show to you're gonna show the games to the world. But I like the way Klopp said, because you know he faced everything. He said that the offside, nothing to say. It was a penalty, and I think he got annoyed a little bit with Des Kelly, who was asking question where he wanted to make sure that Klopp will go for a debate or some problems to the EPL, and it's why Klopp got crazy in a way and answered that and started that other debate with Des Kelly.
What do you think, Craig?
Well, it was Sky Sports last week, and it was BT Sports, our partners at BT, this week. And look, he is correct. However, there's no point chipping away at the broadcasters, because it's the Premier League who put these slots up to be bought for extensively big money. And whilst the clubs want a piece of that cake, a huge piece of that cake, they've got to understand how it's all going to be carved up. And that 7:30 slot for us in the US, 12:30 in the UK, was a big slot that was fought over. Now, you know, you go and take that up with the Premier League. It's not an ideal scenario, but what do you want BT Sports to do? Put Sheffield United, West Brom in there. They need to have elite teams in that slot. Like Sky Sports need to have elite teams in the 4:30 slot or whatever it is tomorrow. These packages have been paid fortunes for. And it wasn't just football clubs that lost money during the pandemic. It was broadcasters as well. So everybody's fighting to try and get some of those finances back. And that means putting these teams in those positions. So if Jurgen Klopp and his chief executive and all these clubs voted in favour and wanted to take the money, I've got a problem with it. They've got to go and see the Premier League, right? Because there's no point in saying to Sky and BT, well, you put us in the 12:30 spot. Who do you want to put in the 12:30 slot? You know, it's not easy. Somebody has to go in there. One of the elite teams has to go in there. And the more he pipes on about it, and this is the second or the third week, and it seems to be churning on, he's getting injuries, yes. But the players are hearing about it. The players are seeing him moan. The players are seeing him get exasperated. And maybe at some point that will filter through to them subconsciously. So I think he's just going to have to bite the bullet in this. I don't know the fixtures going ahead. I don't know how many times he's going to be in those slots or how many times it's going to be a problem for him. But the broadcasters have to put people in through the packages that they purchased. And it's their prerogative to do so.
Craig, I will follow you in a normal season with a normal life.
Yep.
But right now, with the pandemic and we see that those teams like Liverpool, Manchester City, yep, Manchester United, Chelsea, they have to play in the and some in the Europa League. They have to play every week, two games per week, and no time to rest. So maybe in that pandemic time, maybe it would have been interesting from the broadcast and the EPL to discuss with all the boards from clubs to sort out maybe and arrange a better schedule for the team who are involved in those European competition play a lot to have, you know, maybe the preferences of the schedule. And maybe today, instead of playing...
But I know what you're saying, but the trouble is that you've got to go to the Premier League with this, because you can't just go to the broadcasters and say, look, you know, the players are tired. Can you bury them in a slot that your ratings are not going to get anywhere near what you would get? And they would say, well, sure, we can do that, but you're going to have to reduce the financial package and compensate us, because we've paid for that slot, which works for our network and our company.
Craig, I hear you. The only thing is, what the point to put a today, Sheffield United against, I don't remember which the other team.
West Brom, Frank,
the last
come on.
Against the, West Brom, sorry, West Brom. Today at 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. in England, instead of, why don't you put the Liverpool at that time and those two teams at 12 because they're not involved in European competition?
Because what might happen, and, I'm not 100% sure here, but the West Brom Sheffield United game may be a Sky Sports package, and you know maybe BT Sport didn't have that package, and they have the 12:30 lunchtime, 7:30 Eastern time here, so they had to drill that particular slot with an elite team, and so that is it's super complicated. But if you want to ask the broadcasters to bury the Man Uniteds, the Liverpools, the Chelseas, the Arsenals, the Cities, and all these teams, if you want to bury them in slots that are going to get decent figures but are not going to rate as the prime-time slots, and that's the reason these packages go for the millions that they do, then the Premier League are going to have to compensate the broadcasters. And so it is a really difficult scenario all round. And, you know, I think Jurgen Klopp's just going to have to bite the bullet on this one. It is unforeseen circumstances for everybody. Now, the Premier League clubs voted to restart the season on September the 12th. So they pretty much knew what was coming. And, you know, it's an unfortunate scenario of the pandemic and the situation we're in that players are picking up injuries. But let me tell you something.
Okay, Matt, I got it, Craig. I think. Well, you won because I was seeing the sports part of the football, and clearly you see the economic part of the football, and you're right. You're absolutely right because we talk about money, and money talks, and you win in that case because it's true that club should have talked to the EPL instead of the broadcast. That's
well,
for sure.
The Premier League pay the biggest money for the rights. Globally and domestically, it is millions, if not billions, of dollars. So money talks. The clubs are happy to take this money. They're making huge money. They're paying the players humongous salaries. Listen, I don't want to see, as a former player like you, Frank, players getting injured. But Virgil van Dijk apart, that injury was down to a horrific challenge from Jordan Pickford, which went unpunished, which was a horrendous decision. But all the injuries we're seeing are small muscle injuries. And whilst it's far from perfect, clearly, for managers and players, it's short-term injuries that can be fixed within 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 weeks. This is a situation that clubs, Dan, are just going to have to deal with because of the situation we are in. So there's no point piping up about broadcasters and time slots because that is a real political minefield. And injuries are going to happen during this season. It's just which club are going to be able to deal with it the best.
Elsewhere, we saw Manchester City beat Burnley by 5-0. They say there are no easy games in the Premier League, Craig.
Well, this was serve the ball up and just completely smash it over the net, wasn't it? Ace after ace after ace. And look, Burnley and Sean Dyche have had a struggling start to the season, but they're normally rugged and tough to beat. But, I mean, they gifted the first two goals. I mean, going to sleep from a throw-in and Tarkowski with a bad pass. And then that just got City off and running. But it's what we're expecting from City, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, just the steamroller teams. The football was great. It's hard to judge them because Burnley were so poor. But I suppose got some game time for John Stones, which was a surprise. Kevin De Bruyne looked great again. Riyad Mahrez looked sharp. But, yeah, they really... Burnley offered little going forward, so it was a clean sheet for Manchester City, but it was a clean sheet against a team that are really, really struggling.
I'm guessing you weren't throwing your phone at your TV this time watching City, Frank.
No, I enjoyed. I enjoyed because, you can say that Burnley was poor and it was an easy game, but they put every ingredient to make sure that they will lead the game at halftime very easily. And they slow down, and you see the difference when you don't give everything. We saw the second half where Burnley had chances to score. They are like 5 or 6 shots in goals. So it means everything about City. They did everything. They played 100%. They were absolutely fantastic. I enjoyed the game. I saw goals. I saw kicks. I saw everything that I want to see from big players, top players like I saw. I even saw Mendy scoring a goal after 4 years at Manchester City. Great.
Meanwhile, what's happened to Everton, Craig? Losing 1-0 today at home against Leeds.
Yeah, I think aspirations got a little bit high there, and you know, at the start of the season, made some good signings. But really, you know, to go to where people thought they were going to go from where they were last year, it was a big ask. And, you know, it's just the ideas have just dried up a little bit. James has gone a little bit quiet. And, you know, I think if they get themselves around, you know, sixth, seventh or eighth, that's probably where I think they're going to be. But they were completely outplayed by Leeds, by the way, whose movement was brilliant. Left themselves almost two against two at times at the back, particularly early on. Fullbacks getting forward. Controlled the middle of the park. Bamford up front's a good target man, really works hard. And, you know, as sort of crackers as Bielsa is on the sidelines, he sits and he fidgets, he gets up, he's down on his knees. He's just got something, hasn't he? His teams are great to watch. And, you know, it'd be a big surprise. I know Leeds struggle defensively at times, but I think they've got more than enough in other areas of the field that they're going to be absolutely fine this season.
Frank?
Yeah, it's more about Leeds that I want to talk than Everton, because Everton faced a team that, when they are in good shape, when they want to give what they gave today, and are clever in their mind, and I see Kevin Phillips, you know, at the middle of the park, you know, what a player. What a player. I don't know if that guy is going to stay long to Leeds, or they have to sign him a big, big contract to make sure that he's not going to go next summer. But it was a masterpiece today. They tired completely Everton. They played tactically so well. They forced them to drop, and they were patient at the same time. They had a fantastic, I say, Phillips, but also Ealing, and I think Ealing on the Ealing, on the right yep. side. The goalkeeper, the French goalkeeper was outstanding as well. He made one bad kick once, but they were good. They were good. I think they're going to play against Chelsea next week. I'm worried if they play the same way. Every team we're going to play against are going to struggle. If you're not fully fit in terms of fitness, you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle against that team. Everton did, and they don't have young players, Alan, James Rodriguez, some players, even if Alan had a good game. I think they struggle because you have to run everywhere for 90 minutes. It's crazy. It's total football like we used to do, used to see. I don't know how long they're going to stand like that, how long they're going to last. I don't think they're going to last more than after the Boxing Day. But right now, it's impossible almost to play against Leeds when they are in that fitness.
Dan, Calvin Phillips is a Leeds boy, so it's you know, I don't think he's in a rush to leave, but money talks, I suppose. But he's already made his debut for England. Gareth Southgate was at the game. I totally agree with Frank. I thought he was outstanding. He's very dynamic. He's a good passer, so don't be surprised if, one, he's not on the plane to the Euros, which I think he will be, and two, he's going to be fighting for a starting place. But to go back to Everton, the one thing I'd say about Ancelotti is I struggle to see him making real in-game changes when things are going against him. At times, Everton have become a bit of a one-trick pony. Yes, he makes some substitutes, but there's really not much getting tinkered with in terms of the shape of the team or trying to do something tactically. It's sort of the long ball up to Calvert-Lewin or trying to get Richarlison down the channel. And I think when teams sort of have a good shape and figure that out, he's going to have to come up with a better plan. He's been able to make tactical changes as well as personnel changes. And I think that's one of the reasons why Everton have struggled after a very good start to the season.
Frank was right. Leeds next is Chelsea, but before that, of course, Chelsea got to take on Spurs. Some big games in the Premier League. We asked you boys for your predictions. Saints against Manchester United. Craig going against his anti-Manchester United ways by backing Solskjaer's side to get all 3 points in that game. Both going for a 2-1 win for Chelsea against Spurs. Arsenal are going to lose against Wolves, according to Frank. Well, be sure to join us on the next edition of the show, where, of course, we'll be looking back at all of those big games.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Let's focus on Spain now. Atletico Madrid remain level on points at the top of the table after a late 1-0 victory against Valencia. We'll discuss them in a moment, but we'll start with Alaves beating Real Madrid away from home for the first time since the year 2000. Julien Laurent and Ali Moreno with us. Ali, it wasn't supposed to be like this for Madrid. Did well midweek against Interman, looking to carry that momentum. Bang, it, a big brick Alaves wall.
Yeah, but it's more of the same for Real Madrid. It's one step forward, two steps back. We should not be surprised at this point, to be quite honest with you. And while people may say, well, no Benzema, no Sergio Ramos, injuries, COVID, so on and so forth, you just look at Real Madrid overall, and there are certain things that you just cannot ignore. And today, starting 11, when you look at the talent available and the names that are available, the facts are the facts. Three goals in this starting 11. Three goals, Modric, Mariano, and Eden Hazard. And Eden Hazard comes off injured around the 30th minute. So two goals from that team. And this is a team that struggles to create opportunities. Even at the best of times during this year, they struggled to create opportunities. Well, today was more of the same. A lot of ball, a lot of possession of the ball, a lot of passing and movement and sideways and back, but not a lot of creativity, not a lot of energy in the attack. Outside of Mariano, you don't see somebody who's actually trying to run in behind or getting between defenders or trying to get themselves in good positions. They just go from B, from A to B to C to D and back to A, B, C, and D. There is nothing surprising about Real Madrid. And then the most concerning part for me in Real Madrid is how vulnerable and how passive they are defensively. How two guys in Lucas Perez and Joselu dominated that back line, in particular Joselu. The moment that that ball went up in the air, nobody was winning those challenges. He was. And then who was getting on the second ball? Usually was an Alaves player going on the counters. And between Lucas Perez, who could have had a hat-trick himself, if not for Thibaut Courtois, and then Joselu, who dominates the two center backs, then Alaves generated enough momentum to get forward, score a couple of goals. Yes, it comes from mistakes from Real Madrid, but it's mistakes that are forced by the willingness of Alaves to pressure higher up the field, to take a chance, to take the game to Real Madrid, which usually doesn't happen for a team of Alaves, that they're usually coming to Madrid and they're going to defend. Well, nobody really fears Real Madrid as much as they once did. They're not threatened by what Real Madrid has or doesn't have in the attack, and so therefore teams are more willing to go and attack them. And if you go and press Real Madrid, you're going to find that, as I said before, they're vulnerable and they're fragile in the back.
If I was back at Real Madrid TV, Jules, I would say they should have clearly had a penalty because pulling hair, I feel, is a foul.
Yeah, and I guess you that would be your right to do that, but I think it goes beyond, even if that, you know, they could have had a penalty, maybe two penalties. There's the one on Hazard as well, when he gets injured after his shots. But if you have to look beyond that, and I agree with Ali, they're not good enough. I don't know why Marcelo is still playing for that team. He is a liability. The absence of Valverde, Ali mentioned no Benzema, no Ramos, but Valverde, especially for those runs, Modric and Cruz, when they play alongside Casemiro, there's not that intensity, there's not the runs anymore. Of course, they're great on the ball and they've got great vision and great passing range, but you miss so much the runs of Valverde, the power that Valverde brings into this team with the ball or even just his runs onto the box, like we saw in the Clásico, for example, on the Benzema goal. There's none of that in the midfield without him. And I just think maybe, and I know that Zinedine Zidane loves it and Hazard and he wants him to be back at his best and etc. But three starts in a row? Really? After missing for a whole year? You put him three times in a row, so three games in 7 days. I just don't think that was wise from the beginning.
Yeah, we talked about Antoine Griezmann a lot, haven't we, over the last few months and that big money move from Atleti to Barcelona. We don't talk about Eden Hazard as much because he's not playing. Starts to play, obviously off injured again today, Ali. Do you agree with Jules that maybe this was a mistake from Zidane playing three in a row?
If it was just three in a row and if it was 90 minutes apiece, yes. But when you look at the totality of minutes of Eden Hazard over that period of time, he's the automatic sub at the 60th minute. He's coming off. He's not playing a full 90 minutes. He's a guy that right now gives you 60 minutes and that's about it. And maybe there are some physical limitations to Eden Hazard, but when you look around and you see what's available for Real Madrid, and Eden Hazard is what we think the best version of Eden Hazard that has been available to Real Madrid, then you got to put him out there. As I just mentioned, limited in the attack, then what other option does Zinedine Zidane have? If only it was for 60 minutes, the problem is that he cannot even get through 30 minutes. Look, I understand that there are concerns about Eden Hazard and his health and his fitness, and you want to take care of him, but they've handled him with white gloves. I mean, they've handled him, okay, Eden, are you ready to go now? Is it okay for you to get out on the field? All right, let's go out there and play 20 minutes at a time. Okay, now let's build it up to 30 minutes. Now let's build it up to 60 minutes. At some point, you got to take that chance and see if this guy can push it to 90 minutes. He cannot even make it through the first half. So I understand the point that Julian's trying to make, but they have it's not like he's been playing 90 minutes. It's been 60, take a break. 60, take a break. They tried to give him another 60 today, and he couldn't do it.
Meanwhile, Jules, Atleti are going to win the league, aren't they?
The Sunday looks good at the moment, even when they're not playing really well, when they're not creating too much like this afternoon at Valencia. They still find a way of winning it with that own goal from Lato, a great cross by Carrasco on the left-hand side, who, by the way, made a really good entrance in that game. But it looks like they really have something, even when Luis Suarez is missing, even when Diego Costa is missing, when João Félix is rested and only on the bench and coming along late, they still find that way of winning games. And yeah, of course, there was a draw against Lokomotiv Moscow in midweek in the Champions League, but in the league, they've been really, really ruthless in the sense they were handling games, controlling games, and finding a way of winning them. And I just think they were impressive. They're 6 points clear of Real Madrid with a game in hand now. I think the biggest gap that Real Madrid bridged to win La Liga was 8 points back in 2002-03, I think. So it's a long way ahead if Atleti do win the game in hand and get 9 points clear of their City rivals, 2 weeks before the Madrid derby as well.
It carries on to what we were talking about last week, Ali, about how Atleti, for you, were favourites, and they've just re-emphasised that, haven't they, today?
Yes, they did. And they were in trouble today for a long period of time in that they look a lot like Barcelona without Luis Suarez. A team that, and this is Atletico Madrid we're talking about, a team that had possession of the ball in the attacking half, passing the ball sideways and back and sideways and back and around the 18-yard box, and Lemar is floating around, and João Félix, when he came off the bench, he was floating around, and Yannick Carrasco comes off the bench and he's floating, and there's a lot of players in and around the 18-yard box, but there's nobody really threatening inside the 18-yard box. And they miss the movement of Luis Suarez. They miss his presence. But even having said that, somehow they're able in the end through an own goal to get a win. And that is indeed the sort of performance and the sort of result, more so than the performance, the sort of result that when you look back into a season, you say, you know what? We were not great. It wasn't our best, but we did enough. Mm. How many of those performances and results we've talked about Real Madrid in the past? Well, this is very much what Atletico Madrid did today. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't sexy. It wasn't the explosive dynamic movements and creativity that you've come to expect now from Atletico Madrid. But they have struggled to create that and to have that and generate that since the absence of Luis Suarez. They win against Barcelona on a mistake by Ter Stegen. They go to Lokomotiv Moscow, or they play against Lokomotiv Moscow, and even at home, they cannot score a goal. And today, they should not have scored a goal if it wasn't because of the mistake from Valencia. But guess what? In the end, 3 points, and they are flying. They're looking at Real Madrid, struggling. Barcelona, struggling. In the meantime, Atletico Madrid continues to win.
Yeah, they look great, don't they? Meanwhile, in France, PSG again failing to register a win. This time, they're going to manage a 2-2 draw against Bordeaux. Thomas Tuchel furious after the game, Jules, saying that they didn't deserve to win that game given their second-half performance.
And once again, Dan, it's a second-half performance as we saw against Monaco last weekend where they were 2-0 up at halftime and ended up losing the game 3-2. This time again, they're 2-1 up at halftime. And in the first half, there was some positive things that they did. I think Marco Verratti playing obviously makes a big difference, as we saw even in the last 10 minutes of the game against Leipzig in midweek. I think when Moise Kean starts up front, you've got a proper number 9 playing there who can hold the ball up, link up the play, which Kylian Mbappe can't do right now because that's not what he does. And I think there was a fluidity there, even if they went behind on that own goal by the young centre-back Pembele. And then in the second half, it's so people go back to individual stuff. So Neymar, every time he has the ball, tries to dribble past everyone. Same with Mbappe. There's a lack of efficiency, of clinicality. They just don't pass when they should pass. They don't shoot when they should shoot. And I just think it's so strange to see the contrast between one half and the other one, exactly like last weekend. And I can understand the frustration from Thomas Tuchel on a game like this, where clearly his team lost 2 points again.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, this is how things stand then in Liga. After that draw, PSG remain top of the table, 3 points clear of Lille, who do have a game in hand. Marseille third, 4 points off the top with 2 games in hand.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, let's focus on Italy now, shall we? Inter move up to second in the table with a convincing victory over Sassuolo. But before we talk about them, let's talk about the fact that Juventus dropped to fifth. They could only manage a 1-1 draw against Benevento. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, that's 5 draws now in their opening 9 matches. Not good enough.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think people are going to see a direct correlation with the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't there. And that's not a good narrative for Andrea Pirlo, for this team. Personally, I think that this team, when they did make progress, they made progress regardless of Cristiano. But now it's all going to be, you know, point to the fact, oh, when he's not there, they can't get it done. I think this was a big night for Paulo Dybala. I don't think he sees his opportunities. Alvaro Morata scored early, but then, of course, kind of went on the fritz a little bit. The problems then remain in the middle of the park. They are simply too slow in moving the ball. They do not have a natural playmaker. We've said this before. Bentancur maybe one day might be that guy. He's not that now. Rabiot certainly isn't. Great player, but does different things. Archer, forget about it. So I think this is going to be an ongoing issue for Andrea Pirlo.
Once again, Gab, I will bring up the point. If this was Sarri, you'd be very angry.
Yeah, but it's not Sarri. It's Andrea Pirlo. And there is a commitment behind Andrea Pirlo, a full commitment, which he has embraced, to try and do things very, very differently. That commitment wasn't there last year with Sarri. It didn't come from Sarri, and it didn't come from the club. And that's why I'm going to be looking at this a little bit different. Not to mention that what Andrea Pirlo is doing is extremely radical compared to what Sarri actually did out there on the pitch. So, yeah, I'm not falling for that one, Dan.
Yeah, but there's one thing to be radical, but you've got to be successful. You took over from the defending champions.
Yeah, but this was the year when, after 9 in a row, if you were going to go in a new direction, this is the year in which to do it. Obviously, they're not happy with dropping points in these circumstances. They're not happy with performances like we saw against Benevento and against Crotone, and indeed, as we saw in the midweek against Ferencváros in the Champions League. I mean, these are facts, right? Equally, you go out there, you have one central defender in Matthijs de Ligt, who's just come back after 6 months out. You know, the club certainly are prepared to give him a little slack. Personally, I'm not a Juve fan, but I'm prepared to give Pirlo a bit of slack as well, because I think what he's doing is interesting, it's ambitious, and I want to give him at least enough time to see if it's going to work out and not stand around like an angry villager with a pitchfork and a torch, Dan Thomas.
Meanwhile, Inter needed a win, didn't they, after their defeat against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and they got it. Against Sassuolo, beating them by 3-0. Remember, they've been very much a surprise package of this season so far. Pirlo still moaning, though, after the game, Gab. Oh, not Pirlo, sorry, Conte.
Or Conte even, yeah. No. I mean, Conte doing what Conte does. He's talking about, you know, he's gone into full siege mentality mode. You know, he's saying everybody's against us, blah, blah, blah. Look, I thought this was an impressive performance and he got the reaction that he wanted. You know, equally, it is a swallow and you do score early in the table. I don't care that they were second, but, you know, when you score straight away, it becomes a lot easier to go out there and play. And he played very well. We even saw your old pal Christian Eriksen coming on for cameo at the end of the game. Read into that what you will. This whole thing of being everybody's against us, people can't wait to see us fail and blah, blah, blah. Look, if it helps Conte feel good about himself, if it helps Inter's players feel good about themselves, and it helps them perform, and it helps them beat Gladbach in midweek and take Inter where they need to be in the Champions League, then great. Then it works and, you know, he can go and say whatever he wants. But, you know, if we're going to try to use these as legitimate excuses for underperformances, no, I'm not having it. I think most people wouldn't have it. Let's just hope that what we see in midweek is more of the Inter that we saw against Sassuolo than the Inter we saw against Real Madrid.
Meanwhile, of course, this is the first real full match day since the passing of Maradona. We saw tributes all around the world, particularly poignant in Italy. We saw them, Gavin, in the 10th minute stopping to applaud.
Yeah, and look, this is one of many ways in which I think football around the world, not just football, you saw it in rugby as well with the All Blacks, is honoring Diego Armando Maradona. You know, I don't know that we necessarily should be surprised because, you know, this was the residence that he had. I mean, and in terms of, you know, international superstars dying, you probably have to go, you know, back to Michael Jackson, maybe even further back, you know, to find somebody of comparable resonance. And that's why everybody wants to participate.
And of course, Sunday, Napoli against Roma, Gab. It's going to be emotionally intense for everyone involved.
Yeah, no question about it. Obviously, Napoli is where he spent 7 years. Napoli is where he delivered 2 titles. Napoli, I think, is where he really reinvented the city on a footballing landscape. And, you know, right now, for them, it's been a bit of an up and down season. You know, you recall what happened against Juventus when they were docked points and had to forfeit the game because they didn't travel due to COVID. You know, you factor those points back in, they're right up there near the top of the table, and so they feel they have a point to prove. As you probably know, Dan, that there's been tension, reported tension between Gattuso and some of the players. In the build-up to this game before the passing of Maradona, I think certainly Napoli fans will be hoping that the news, you know, in a tragic way, brings everybody together and that they sense that this game against Roma is a tremendous opportunity, not just to honor Diego, but to get the team right back on track where they should be, given how talented the squad is.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. Speaking of Maradona, really good Gab and Jules podcast that dropped on Thursday. Gab and Jules, of course, reflecting on his life and his impact across the world. Be sure to check that out. I implore you to go and listen to it. Napoli against Roma then, one of 5 games tomorrow. It's our feature game as well. Join us at 2 p.m. in the studio as we'll count down to kickoff with Jurgen Klinsmann. And 2 games here on Monday as well. Torino taking on Sampdoria and it's Genoa against Parma. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bayern Munich stretched their lead at the top of the table to 2 points. They Leipzig with the win, but the big talking point, Borussia Dortmund losing at home against a Köln side who hadn't registered a single victory up until this weekend. Yanar Fjordtoft joins us to discuss this. Jan, your boy Haaland with an unbelievable opportunity late on in this one to make it 2-2, but fluffed his lines.
Well, breaking news, Erling Haaland couldn't score, and he couldn't score from like 10 centimeters. And it was not his game, it was not Dortmund's game today. As you said, Cologne hadn't won a game for ages, and they scored on two corners, quite equal to each other. I can't believe they didn't learn from the mistake they did on the first one. Then they took one back with Hazard, but it was, although they are very good in second half, scoring 17 of their 20 goals in the Bundesliga in the second half, you never felt that Dortmund was at it today. They created some chances, but there was not that pressure. And if they're going to challenge for the title, first of all, they can't get away with starting all games in the 46th minute. Mm. But they can't never lose to Köln at home.
Meanwhile, Bayern, far from their best today, but they got the job done.
Like Bayern always do. And this was a game defensively. Bayern had been struggling a bit lately, making mistakes. And this time, even Manuel Neuer made a mistake. Koulibaly made it 1-0 for Stuttgart. They have had another chance to make it even a more lead. And then, of course, Koeman does it. Lewandowski does it. They get Costa on and he scores. And I think that is a big difference between the two teams. Dortmund, when they are struggling, it seems like everybody is struggling. And when even Erling Haaland can't score, they're gone. But Bayern will always have another weapon and always a different skill of one player on the bench or whatever to get that goal. And they put themselves on the bus with 3 points, lot of mistakes, but they don't care. They are 3 points more today than Dortmund, and their main challenger is 4 points ahead, away from them.
Jan, as always, thank you very much. A lot more, as always, available on our podcast. Be sure to download that. You've got the audio version of the show, plus bonus material as well. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. God, we have lots to talk about today. Thank you very much to Jules, to Ali, to Jan, and to Gab. We will be back tomorrow for more. Don't forget, Napoli-Roma live on ESPN Plus tomorrow. For now, I'll leave you with extra time with Frank and Craig. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Frank and Craig with me. Frank, does Klopp...
Oh, Dan, sorry, Dan. Just one thing, because I forgot, you know, before I forget, I'm sorry to cut you off. It's a big day for me, you know, because it's somebody's getting older today, and it's my daughter. She's 30 today.
Oh, congratulations.
But she's not the only one.
Congratulations, Frank.
Thank you.
What's her name?
Yeah, it's Jade.
Jade?
And... but she's not the only one. I was told that somebody is getting older as well.
Yep.
Dan,
yep.
Happy birthday,
thank
my dear.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's very kind. What a way to spend it with you two.
50.
I feel 50.
Isn't it horrible? Yeah. 40.
Young.
40 years old. All right, then. Does Klopp need a vacation, Frank?
Yeah, well, in some pictures today, you know, we saw him. I think it was when Natalia Phillips got injured a little bit, or went on the floor, and he was looking at the player, said, "No, not one again." And I think he's really fed up, and it's just the beginning, because through the Boxing Day, I think we can have some damages. maybe he needs some vacation, but he's not the only one.
Castle Rock Brett will need a vacation if Tottenham lose tomorrow.
Is it a Spurs fan?
He's a big Spurs fan.
Oh, I see. Does he abuse you?
No. Oh. No. He doesn't abuse me. No. Sometimes.
Is he?
He's a big Spurs fan.
Oh, there you go. On a similar subject, as a player, is there really a big difference between a 12:30 kickoff and a 3 p.m. kickoff on the same day in relation to recovering from a game played 63 hours earlier, Craig?
I personally don't think it makes a... I don't think we would have batted an eyelid at that. Now, if you're asking for an extra day's rest with the science that they've got these days, an extra, 20 hours, 24 hours, with all the support that the modern player gets with the nutrients and the supplements, then, yeah. But 2.5 hours, we're clutching at straws if you think that's going to make a big difference.
Frank?
No, that's not the point. Yeah, that's not the point for me. The point is when you play at 12:30, you have to wake up pretty much early, around 7:30, where when you play at 3 p.m., you can wake up at 9:30, so almost have a normal life for a football player, because we're not like everybody else. Sorry, we don't wake up at 6 or 7 to get ready at 8. So we are more used to wake up around 8, except if we have kids, but it's what we normally wake up is around 8. And if you play at 3, it's like a normal night through, normal night that you have to go through, and a normal wake up.
Hey, listen, we'd be up at 7:30 anyway at a hotel for the big fry-up breakfast. No matter what time we're playing. Sausages, beans, eggs, hash browns, toast. The game's in 5 hours, I don't care. Get it on the plate, get up for seconds again, sugar in the tea, up to the room, little lie down. Oh, how's that going to go before the game? So I don't... There could be, we're getting into fine detail here about sleeping patterns and stuff, but I don't know.
You are very much the opposite to Steve Nicol, Craig. You get up early, don't you? Steve says getting up before midday is early.
Yeah, he is a one-off in that sense, because Steve plays golf with me and a lot of the lads that I play with, and I'll say to them, he needs to set his alarm for... he could easily, if I said to him, we've got a 10:30 tea time or an 11 a.m. tea time, which we don't normally do, he would say, okay, I'll set my alarm for 10:15. I'm like, I've had 5 hours by then. By that time, I'm on lunch, because I'm up at if I'm teeing off at 8 a.m., I don't have to set an alarm. 7:30, I don't have to set an alarm. Stevie has to set an alarm. It's a marvelous skill to have, isn't it, if you like sleeping a lot. But most people... particularly when they get to the age of 40 plus, Daniel.
Yes.
Start to wake up earlier in the morning.
That's something to look forward to. Frank, what time are you up?
Normally around 9:30, 10.
That's late.
Don't take any appointment before 11. Yeah, I don't take any appointment before 11 in the morning.
Wow.
I go to bed around 1:30, 2, especially when I work. With you guys and after games in Champions League or late games during the week, we talk and I finish around 12:30. And because you put me under pressure so much, I don't go to bed around before 2 to relax a little bit before. Now, I like to watch TV until late or read a book, and I don't go to bed around, not before 1 at least. So I wake up around 9, 9:30.
But he'll go to bed at 11 and still get up at 11.
Yeah.
Or 12.
Yeah. 12
hours. I'm usually in bed. I could be upstairs by 10 o'clock, but once the Celtics kick in, I'm out the game.
That's it. This is probably putting everyone to sleep. Right. Would listening in on a conversation between VAR officials and refs make things more clear in terms of how they're coming to these conclusions? Wouldn't it give the league intel on what needs changing, etc.? We see this, of course, Craig, in rugby a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a place that TV in particular, because it's not going to affect the fans at the stadium when you start having stuff like that coming across the tannoy. It's not going to work. But certainly for the viewer at home, I think that would be a nice conversation to hear. Just how they get to the end point of a decision, good or bad, right or wrong, but how they got to that point and what they were seeing. As you say, rugby union and some other sports have it. I really enjoy it in rugby union because it's crystal clear. And I would like to see football trying to bring that in. We're having baby steps with this technology as it is. But yeah, I think that is something that would be really good and really insightful for the viewer at home.
Frank, you've come up against Roberto Baggio quite a few times during your time with the French national team. Do you think that in terms of skills and abilities, he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Italian player of all time?
Wow.
He was absolutely fantastic. He got injured a lot during his career, and that's why maybe we don't think about him when we think about the best player in the world. But definitely, he had his peaks and his peak, and when he was at the best, he was really one of the best. But in terms of best Italian ever, I have to put in the same position. I have to put Gianfranco Zola. I mean, the guy was absolutely fantastic. I had the chance to see him playing when he played for Italy against England at Wembley, and he just signed for Chelsea. And I played with him for like 5 years. The guy was a genius, really a genius. Don't forget that we lately talked a lot about Maradona. Is the one who a little bit say that's the end of Maradona in Naples when Zola went, because he took his place. He was absolutely fantastic player.
You know, Gab Mercotti and some of our other colleagues would know the historical side of the national team way better than us, because they've had so much success over the years, Daniel. But you know, we should never just put this down to attacking players. I know Frank mentioned Gianfranco. Roberto Baggio was a great player, but they've had so many in 1982 World Cup. Paolo Rossi, you know, the list is endless. You know, Franco Baresi and Maldini, you know, with... You just don't get any better than that. You know, Claudio Gentile, many, many years ago, the rugged defender. I mean, it's hard to quantify to say the greatest Italian player when they've had so many in so many different positions.
Do we talk about Gentile or not? No. Not really.
About who?
Gentile? Do you remember Gentile?
Dan doesn't know who he is.
No, Gentile was a butcher. I mean, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Which European league would you say is the most entertaining right now? Frank, we make you watch a lot of football. Which league is the most entertaining for you? We know you hate Italians.
I don't hate Italians. I think the Italian league dropped dramatically and reached the same level as the Ligue 1 in France.
Wow.
I would say that...
You're going to wind so many people up by saying that.
I don't care. It's what I think. We can see that in Champions League or Europa League, you know, that Italian teams are struggling against others. For me, the most interesting league will be between the PL and the Bundesliga, because I think in Germany we have good football. It's offensive football. It's very entertaining. But I will go for the PL, of course.
Frank's upset the attack. You know, he's upset them.
They're going to get really angry at him for saying
that.
They
get really angry.
They'll say, look at Atalanta, the Champions League last year.
Who taught me, except Atalanta, that's true. I love Atalanta, the way they play. Oh. But who taught me, I don't give a stuff. It's you, Craig. I don't give a stuff when you don't want to talk about something.
Not bothered, I believe, is the expression.
My answer is, what league do we pay the most rights for? That's my answer.
Yes.
That's my corporate ticket for the day.
Where are we? Are Chelsea capable of breaking down a sitting team like Tottenham based on recent form? Will they? Well, we saw during the show, both of you said it was going to be 2-1 to Chelsea, Craig.
Well, if you look at the sitting teams that they've played recently, Burnley would be considered that. Newcastle last week was certainly a team that were at home, camped in to defend. I think if you look at the possession stats, that would tell you. But you would have known that even going into the game. It was crystal clear that Chelsea were going to have 60 or 70% possession at St James's Park. So that was another process in breaking teams down. And there have been others this year. I think, you know, and I'd have to look back at the fixtures, but I think Tottenham are going to be the most organised of the deeper setting teams, there's no doubt about that, with arguably the biggest threat in the transition to the counter-attack. Although they are missing Alderweireld, they're still going to be arguably the most difficult to break down. But Chelsea have faced that already this season, just not that standard of team, I'd say.
Good stuff, boys. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. We'll be back.
Happy birthday, old man.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We'll happy see birthday!
I can see the grey hairs.
Yeah, the grey hairs, definitely.
Yeah, right.
Frank, you're in no position to talk about hair. Right, that's it.
Bring your hair on the back already, look.
Hey, show us your little, how's your little halo going, Craig?
I filled it in. Crawford's given me time to fill it in.
Oh, yes.
Frank's get too much.
Like a former New York mayor, maybe. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. We will be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.